again, this is about the devil comes to baseball, right? And there is a devil character. There's sort of a devilish agent that is a main character. And at the end of the day, it's kind of murky as to, you know, whether he survives or not. And I have, that's kind of the basis for the sequel, is that he comes back at certain times.
Okay, everyone, welcome back to Living the Next Chapter. I have an author on from one of my favorite places in the world to visit. I love his part of the world, and I want to go there right now. Michael's here on the podcast. We've been talking about his book, Spillage, and there's a lot of great stuff we're going to talk about, and I'm excited to have him on from the Big Apple. Michael, welcome to Living the Next Chapter. Glad to have you here.
Thank you, Dave. Good to be here.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I kind of gave it away, but can you tell everybody where you are in this big world of ours?
Brooklyn, USA. Right in the heart of Brooklyn, over near Prospect Park, enjoying it very much. Been living here for about 40 years.
There you go. Awesome. It's great. That's one of my favorite places to go. I have friends and family that live there for many, many, many years, and so I'd go down there to Bushwick and then over to Manhattan, of course, because you have to do that. And yeah, I love it. FAO Schwartz was one of my favorite places to go. Obviously, all the tourist sites, David Letterman, all those things back in the day. I just, something special about that part of the world, right?
It's really changed over the years.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's great. But you wrote a book around your amazing life there in New York. I'm excited to have you on the show. How did this all start for you, like, to write Spillage? Where did the idea come from to put pen to paper and create this?
Well, I was in my early 20s when I started Spillage. I was working very hard to become the next great American novelist, and very intensely focused on that. I had just moved back to New York City from Paris, where I'd had a grant to write fiction. And back in 1976, a few things happened. One, very sadly, my father died of a heart attack very suddenly. And it was also on the flip side, I had just fallen in love with the woman that I ultimately married and have been married to for more than 45 years. So love and death were very much on my mind. Spillage is a book where it's fundamentally a love story. And it's also a book where the dead come back to life. A lot of strange things happen in Spillage. Because effectively, Spillage is an update of the musical Damn Yankees, Where the Devil Comes to Baseball. When I started it, I had Damn Yankees in mind. I was a Yankee fan. The Yankees are very much a part of New York. And this was my effort to express, you know, what New York was all about to me. My feelings of love, my anxiety about love, and my feelings about life and death and, you know, other weighty matters of the world.
Wow. So there's a lot in here. This is amazing. So what was the process of writing it? How long did it take you to pull Spillage together?
So I spent the better part of my 20s writing Spillage, right? So okay. Starting in 76, I guess I worked on it for about 5 years altogether. When I first started it, I was in a writing workshop at New York City College. I was working with a postmodern master named Donald Barthelme, who used to write short fiction for New Yorker and several, you know, collections of stories. Ultimately, I wasn't able to get the book published. And it was pretty crushing for me as I was about to turn 30, and I had this dream of becoming a novelist. And it really became apparent to me that I wasn't going to be able to make a living doing this. And I didn't quite know where to go. And I put the book down. But maybe I'll pick it up again later. Later turned out to be, you know, more than 40 years later. I went on to have a career in crisis communications. That book was always just collecting dust at the bottom of a file cabinet. I stepped back from a major role at my company at the beginning of 2000. So it was just around the time that COVID hit. I went back to the office and retrieved all my old stuff. And there was Spillage, the bottom of the drawer, And I went back and reread it. There was really something I liked about it. I could see why it didn't get published. It was pretty disjointed and long and too many twists and turns. Ultimately, it was unreadable for me, even though there were a lot that I liked about it. So I went back to it. I chopped it way down. And I actually found a really, really good editor to work with. And I built it back up with my, you know, old man's perspective. But really, I viewed it as when I went back to it, as a statement of my youth, who I was at that time, how I viewed the world. And and when I went back to it, I had another, you know, mission in mind. Because now, you know, when I started it, I was a young man. I was about the same age of the characters. Everything was in real time. Everything was an urgent issue. And now, you know, I'm a grandpa. And I actually kind of looked at it. My audience that I had in mind was my five-year-old grandson. It's like, okay, you know, what is Pop-Up going to leave behind? And what was this world that I lived through, you know, back in the 70s? So it was a different drive this time around. And it wasn't quite so much, you know, an exercise, a feat in just how far my imagination could take me. I wanted to make it more accessible, readable, focus more on the characters and the period, and really capture the essence of, you know, 1970s New York, which was the bad old days, just a kaleidoscopic chaos that burst.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to have been in the room with you, looking over your shoulder as you pull that file cabinet open, and dig in there and pull this out and go, oh, wow. Like, I'm feeding it in my mind. I'm adding kind of scene and sounds and all that to it. But I would love to see the look on your face as you pull this out and go, oh, I gotta look at this right now. Like, I'm not going to put that in a box. I gotta flip through this. Like,
yeah, it was quite a scene.
It's amazing how you change too, right? How you're one way when you're writing it in your 20s, and now you're reading it later going, wow, all the things I didn't know at the time,
mm-hmm.
right? When I thought I knew everything in that moment, now with hindsight looking back, there's so much growth has happened for you. Because we grow, right? And that's the one thing, that's kind of the reason why I picked the name of my podcast, we're living the next chapter, is that we're constantly growing. Even as we write, we're going to write differently in the future as we look back at our works. So you had the joy of the hindsight to look back and go, wow, I could do this differently now, knowing what I know now, and add some new insight to what I've written in the past. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, it's a great process. I mean, I've been entering into it, you know, I was afraid, you know, I'd lost a step or two in terms of my imaginative reach, right? And you know, the book was very daring, you know, for me when I first wrote it, and I wasn't quite sure whether I could, you know, recapture some of that dynamism. It turned out I think I did it pretty well, but you know, over the years, you know, I'd learned to write a different way, and I think my actual writing got better. And certainly my perspective got better, right? I mean, I think in the beginning, I was portraying a world. It was an alternate universe. It was a fantasy. It had a lot of bells and whistles. The characters went through it. But the characters weren't quite as important as the world. And now when I went back to it, I just tried to focus more on the characters and how they were dealing with the world. And I think I have a lot more understanding about that, you know, having grown old.
Can you tell us more about your main characters that we're going to meet through Spillage?
Sure. There's a couple. There's a young couple at the center of Spillage, right? And they are a counterculture couple, really. They grew up in the 60s. You know, they went to Woodstock together. They fell in love in 68. They're city kids. And they've lived together for 8 years. It's in 1976, and the relationship's really at a crossroads. The woman, Joan, basically decides to leave her boyfriend, Elliot, and chaos ensues in the relationship, and chaos ensues in the world. Joan develops an obsession for a baseball pitcher named Nick the Swan Spillage. That's the title character. I'd like to say Joan and Elliot really are the main characters, and maybe Joan is the most main of all. Spillage is the object of their affection, and Spillage is a main character in his own right. Right, so Spillage, the city has fallen apart. It's even worse than we all can all remember. There's a revolutionary group called the Satanic Vanguard that's on the loose. They've kidnapped the mayor who's running for president in 1976, and it's an alternate 76. The president, the incumbent, is Richard Nixon, who survived his scandals and is running for a third term. Joan makes a deal with the devil to win the pitcher's heart. So it's really an update of Damn Yankees.
There you go. I like it. I like it. Talk a little bit through about your reader as you're writing. What were some of the key things about your reader that you were trying to address or trying to capture? Who did you have in mind when you were writing?
Well, I think as a primary reader, it's probably, you know, people of a certain age, the boomers. I mean, it's really about the boomer generation's formative years. And it's a bit of a satire of those formative years. So for people that live through that time, all the readers that I've talked to, it really does bring back the era in a playful, in a wickedly playful way. Then for younger readers, like my children and ultimately my grandchild, I'm really trying to capture, you know, what a very special era was like. There was really nothing like New York in the 70s. There's nothing like that city in a state of disrepair. I mean, when I was young, I was thinking about it, it was kind of like Rome in its last days, you know, Weimar Republic. I mean, everything was falling apart. Nothing worked. But there was this incredible dynamism. There was an artistic movement, you know, music and literature that would ultimately take hold. I mean, the city ultimately revived and you know, is very vibrant today. As many issues it has, it's truly a vibrant metropolis. But even at its lowest point, there was always something special about it. So I want my readers to live through that period. Live through it, relive it, experience it in its all its glory.
So there's a lot of historical elements to the story as well. Then they're going to bring people back to that moment.
There are a lot of historical elements, you know, some real, some sort of just a satiric play on. I mean, even the baseball character, the pitcher, Nick Spillage, is based on, there was a pitcher in 1976 that burst on the scene named Mark the Bird Fidrich. Baseball fans may remember him as a quirky pitcher, you know, talk to the baseball, did a monstrous antics on the round. So Spillage is a little bit of a play on him. There was this pleasant, you know, this, I mean, New York was falling apart. There's a lot of scenes in the book that were reminiscent of the time. You know, the city goes black, dark, you know, blackout, which were common then. The crime was rampant. In real life, the Bronx was burning. In my book, it's Coney Island that's burning. So there's a lot of historical reference, but it's a pretty outlandish rendition of it.
Yeah. So what are you most proud about when you think about Spillage? When the topic comes up, you get to come on a podcast and talk, or meet somebody on the street and talk about your book. What are you most proud about when you talk about Spillage?
Well, I am proud of being perseverant, right? It's a 50-year it's a 50-year project, and I'm really happy that it's come to fruition. And when I think back, you know, about my ambitions and what I started, you know, even the short stories that I was, you know, started to write in college, there was a vision that I had. And I think over the years, this is a really pretty good rendition of that vision. I really feel like I've accomplished what I set out to accomplish many, many years ago with a circuitous path. But it's just a good feeling to have.
You mentioned you've done other writings in the past as well. What other things have you written? What other things capture your interest as a writer?
Well, I primarily was focused always on writing fiction, but, you know, but in my youth, I did dabble with a few things. I wrote a children's book. It was kind of a, you know, and even Spillage just has a sort of a strain of Alice in Wonderland to it, which is a book I've always been fascinated by. So I wrote my Alice in Wonderland-ish book right in my 20s, which actually kind of got close to getting published. I did a play which involved the Kennedy family, which is always, the Kennedys have always been, you know, a fascination for me. They make a little appearance in Spillage as well. I had a stage reading of the play, but I didn't get into full production. I did a little experiment. I tried to write some articles for the Village Voice. There's a kind of a gonzo journalism. And again, that's something that plays out in spillage. But the problem was for me with writing these articles is they always ended up veering into fantasy. So it was a little fear and loathing in Las Vegas, like, right. I never quite could make it as a straight journalist. You know, and over the years I've done a lot of writing, but it's a lot of it's ghostwriting, op-eds and other things. I've written for corporations, basically. I help corporations condense their message when they're going through problems and help them communicate. So that's a very different kind of writing.
Yeah. I've had several ghostwriters on the podcast, and I always find them quite exciting to talk to, because as a person that creates, I would love to have my name on whatever I create, and not having my name, but walking by a shelf or something and seeing a book written by you in someone else's words, it's interesting to you, like, I'd love to tell people about that, but that's, I can't, you know, and it's like, but they love the idea that they can give a voice to someone who can't do that specific writing and help them share their message. And that's where they find their joy as a writer. And I'm like, that's interesting that ghostwriters find that little spot where they find their little niche in their niche and they can help people with their words.
Yeah, I did a lot of that. It was satisfying to a degree. I must say that, you know, publishing something with my own name on it has a special degree.
Yeah.
This is the first book that I've actually gotten to completion. So, you know, as a 72-year-old, you know, I'm proud of it.
Yeah, I like it. Who else inspires you as an author? Who do you look to that kind of give you legs as a writer?
Well, that's an interesting question. So back in the time when I started writing, there were a number of writers that I admired, I thought were influential. So one that comes to mind is Tom Robbins, and even Cowgirls Get the Blues. There's a kind of a voice, a sensibility, a humor to that, sort of fantasy element that I think is pretty apparent in Spillage. People have told me that kind of comes across. Thomas Pynchon was another one, the complicated fantasies that he wrote, the play with language, the play with names, seriousness and playfulness sort of working off one another. That was very interesting to me. Kurt Vonnegut was another one in that realm. Hunter S. Thompson, I think, mentioned, right, that gonzo sound of feel, that was important. The Beats. So all of those were influences. Gabriel Garcia Marquez and magic realism is very important to me. That still is. Today I have a somewhat different sense. I'm not necessarily reading to study. I was reading more to study in those days, right? And classic philosophy was also something that was important to me then. But now it's a little more, like I love the Slow Horses books. I've been reading the Cutting for Stone. Andrew Verghese is interesting to me. So the Greek, novel Circe and the Song of Achilles, Madeline Miller, those were very interesting to me. But I'm reading more to enjoy than to be inspired at this point.
Yeah. And we have a lot of young authors that are listening to the podcast, and they're on their journey of writing, and maybe they're in their 20s, and they're writing to the best of their ability at the moment. And again, they know what they know, and they don't know what they don't know as a writer, and they're learning as they write and learn their craft. What kind of words of wisdom would you have if you sat down in a local cafe there in Brooklyn and met with another author? What kind of advice would you give them over coffee?
Well, I think that the first bit of advice is to persevere, right? And if you've got a vision, lay it out there, right? And write for yourself first. Try to put it out there, be authentic. Try to get some feedback once you've got it done. You can bend a little bit when you're based on that feedback, because you never quite know when you're writing how people are going to react to it. But I think first and foremost, be true to yourself and persist. I mean, my problem, such as I have a problem as a writer, is I've always been too thin-skinned about it. And that's why I stopped. I mean, I couldn't deal with the criticism. Probably in hindsight, shouldn't have. I could have gone on. I would have ended up with a different book. But maybe I would have ended up with five books. It's hard to say. I think you have to have a bit of a thick skin about this, right? And just persist, no matter what the reaction.
What part of criticism is the part that you struggle with the most?
Well, when people don't like it.
Yeah.
I feel personal. Right. Like, I mean, you know, it's like being rejected, you know, from a date, you know? I kind of understand, you know, my book's not for everybody. My vision's not for everybody. I think there's it's fundamentally, it's fun. It's lively, it's entertaining. But you have to work at it a little bit. And there are people that don't necessarily, you know, think the work is, you know, worth the reward. So I have a sense of it, but it stings a little bit. I mean, I want everybody to love it. That's just an impossible dream.
Yeah, because there's some forms of criticism are meant to improve you, right? Where there's like little things that an author might come around you and go, if you go this way, maybe it's going to open a door for you. And in the moment, you're like, but I don't want to go that way. I want to stay. But there's wisdom there, right?
Sometimes. Well, totally. I mean, look, and I had some really good mentors when I was young, and I had a support network when I was young. And I think these are important things, right? So,
good.
So you know, I did white writers workshops, college, graduate school, you know, and I would get a lot of feedback. Then after I finished school, I went off. I went to Paris, locked myself in a garret, you know, tried to write, you know, coming back to it, you know, after all these years, I didn't necessarily have a support network. I mean, I'm not involved with, you know, workshops or any literary community. I think one of the most important things was I found a good editor, even in my old age, I found a terrific editor. And she really did give me good guidance. You know, interestingly, when I went back to the book, and cut it back, I kept the diary, and the diary was focused on who was this crazy young guy that wrote this book and what were the times like, you know, when he wrote it. And I toggled back and forth between snippets of the book and snippets of my current diary. And I was all fixated on, you know, the difference between today and back in the 70s. And I gave it to this editor to look at, and she said, well, you know, I really love the memoir. I really love the diary, but I don't know about the toddling back and forth, and you're doing something pretty bold with the novel to begin with. Why don't you take those insights that you have now about that time period and put them into the characters and just focus on the novel and fleshing out the novel? I thought that was a terrific insight, and I pursued it. Now, the second thing she said I thought was like really important, because the novel, as you say, it has got a lot going on, and it's chaotic, and it's a portrayal of chaos. But, you know, when I structured it, one of the first drafts I did for this editor, she came back and looked at it and says, well, you dart from here to here to here to here to here. Why don't you, at some point, change the lens and focus it more on one character at a time? And I structured it along those lines. I think it really improved the flow. So I believe I was a teacher for a while, and I still do some tutoring of kids. I believe in good teaching. I believe in good mentoring. I think it's incredibly important as an author to have a good mentor and to have a good feedback network that you trust.
Yeah. And to that point, I'm reading through, as we chat on your website, some amazing reviews from some great people out there that have looked at your book and given their feedback back to you. What does that mean to hear back from people and to read these comments you have listed on your website? They're outstanding.
Oh, well, I am so grateful for that. I mean, it feels like, you know, it's vindication, it's validation, it's vindication. The feedback, much more than the sales, is what I, you know, what drives me. And it's great to have those reviews. And actually, they've sort of encapsulated what the book's about, you know, in better words than I can use. So I was really, when they started to come in, I really was over the moon. I can get some of your listeners, some readers to read the book and come back to me with comments that are positive. That would thrill me no end.
Yeah, I think in getting beyond the great book, great author review, like that kind of, that's it. That's all they say. I want more to that. Let's give us some meat to that review. So that when someone's reading that review, it steers them towards the book. That's one of the things I try to encourage for everyone listening to this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right. That's terrific.
Yeah, it really is helpful. And I think as one gift we can give back to our authors is giving them a great review on their book. So the book is out in the world. You're enjoying the feedback. People are enjoying the book. My podcast is called Living the Next Chapter. So I have to ask my guests, for you, what is your next chapter? What are you excited about down the road? What's coming for you in the future?
Well, remember, I said that when I started to rewrite Spillage, I started to write this diary. And then, you know, on the counsel of the editor, I dropped that from the book, but I've kept the diary going. I don't write it in every day, but it's a continued narrative. And it's, looking back at my youth and looking out at the world today, some personal and some political. I'm continuing this, and I'm probably going to continue it through the election. So it starts off, it's 2020, it's beginning of COVID. There's an election going on. It's going to finish up through 2024. Then I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do with it. So I could either go back to it as journal, as diary, as memoir, or I might go back to it and fictionalize it. I've given a little bit of thought to writing a sequel. Maybe. I don't know. It kind of depends. I'm just focused on getting this one out. I think when the dust clears, I'll have some further thoughts on the other. But I mean, writing is now, it's my main focus. As a lifestyle, it's important to me. And now it's more about self-expression than it is about trying to make a living. And that's liberating, too.
Yeah. And then I always kind of interested and curious about what didn't make its way into Spillage. What was edited out? What was removed due to whatever reason? But is there any parts of that where you're like, oh, there's something still there. There's a little piece of Spillage that I'd love to revisit. Is there anything that hit the editing room floor?
That's interesting. There's a lot that hit the editing room floor of the book. I mean, the original book was about twice as long as the current.
Okay.
And even being twice as long, I scaled it back because, I'd say about, two thirds of the book is actually fresh. Right. So, So I'm not sure there's anything I truly miss, about, what I left behind. Actually thought about whether I should be saving one copy of that longer, original Spillage that, my grandchildren will maybe do out of their own desk drawer and look at. I don't think it's of great relevance to many readers because I went off the deep end. I felt I went off the deep end. And then it was how far could I push things, right? I pushed so hard that my 70-year-old self wasn't that interested anymore, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like I got it down to the essence. There's nothing I really miss. Maybe, I eliminated a lot of characters, and one of the characters I cut way back was the mother of, one of my main characters. I think maybe I could have gotten a little bit more of her in there, but fathers tend to be a little more important to this book than mothers. Interestingly enough.
Yeah, because I always wonder if there's a seed there when things are removed for something possibly in the future, or even a short story or something small that could be as an accompaniment to what you've written, just based on a character that you wish you could talk a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't have quite that feeling, but I do. Look, the again, this is about the devil comes to baseball, right? And there is a devil character. There's sort of a devilish agent that is a main character. And at the end of the day, it's kind of murky as to whether he survives or not. And that's kind of the basis for the sequel is that he comes back at certain times, right? And so this is 1976, and certainly the devil was present in 2001, 9/11, present at, at certain other periods in history. And I still have this, this scene of my main character, being Well, there's one scene in particular, because I had as a life experience going to the Middle East and almost getting blown up in Lebanon. Was like, I went for the company Intel to do a project for them, and while I was there, Al Qaeda blew up three buildings and three hotels, including one that I had been in 5 hours before. And I sort of been thinking about that scene and putting my character in that scene, and then running into that devil figure. Right, he's back. He's back. So that's in my sequel imagination. We'll see what happens with that.
Wow. That's very interesting. I'd love to read that. That'd be amazing. Oh, that's great.
That in mind.
Wow. Yeah. Keep us up to date on that. That's great. But again, the website is spillagebook.com, and we'll have links to all that in the show notes as always, so people can come and find the book, get in touch with you. Again, what is your as we kind of part out here, what is your love message to your reader? They're going to have the book in their hand. They're going to read it for the first time. They're excited to open the pages and start reading. Before they jump in, what would you love to say to them as they begin their read?
Well, this is, you talked about love letters. This is my love letter to New York. New York, and it's wildest, it's craziest, it's darkest days. So if you love New York, you should be interested in reading this book. And there's a lot to love about New York. So I'm hoping that people all over the world will get into that.
It's amazing. Michael, I love having you on the podcast. I love talking about Spillage and your writing journey and everything, and excited to know that there's the possibility of more, maybe, in the future. Hey, we're excited about that.
We'll take another 50 years, I hope.
I love it. And I love the fact that you got pulled that filing cabinet open, reached down into there, and pulled out Spillage and went, oh, that's right, the book. I want to do this. I still want to do this. I love that.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Everyone, all the information for Michael is in the show notes. Make sure you head over to spillagebook.com and check out all the amazing reviews. Grab yourself a copy and then join with the amazing reviewers. Leave an amazing review as well for Michael and his book. And encourage our authors as they're out there writing and sharing their story. And the best thing, buy a copy of the book, head down to Brooklyn, and read it there right on the street as you walk around in a local cafe. Get some context to your reading by visiting New York soon as well. Michael, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening all the way to the end of the podcast. That's a big signal to all of the players, the YouTubes, the Apples, the Spotifys, that you found value in this episode of Living the Next Chapter, just by you listening to the end. You just sent a huge bat signal out to the app saying this was a great podcast, a great conversation. So you listening to this point, you've done your job. I have one more ask of you. If you know anyone that would benefit from this conversation, would you share this episode with them? Would you just get on, send them a message, send them the episode, tell them about this episode, tell them to livingthenextchapter.com to get all the information about the podcast. Can you do that for me? Because the more people that hear this message, this episode, the better. I want to support these amazing authors, and I know you do as well. So sharing this episode really helps, and I appreciate you. See you on the next episode, and thank you for listening to Living the Next Chapter.